what are you going to do?
I think he's onto something. That's a bridge too far. That's crazy. That's not practical. That's not going to happen. I might be eating too much lamb. Don't go crazy. Don't move up from 14 to 9. You think Isaiah Simmons ran a good 40? You haven't seen me with a shopping cart, gentlemen.
Welcome in, everybody. It is the king of Newport Richie, the baron of Big Storm Beer, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Uncle Ira, Mr. Ira Kaufman, in his fifth decade covering the National Football League. This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast, presented by Bill Curry Ford. I'm Steve Isbitz, a Joe Bucks fan. Lee DeCamper is here, and the sage is in the house. His mask is off. How are you, Ira?
I'm gearing up, Steve. I'm making preparations because my wife has me on a once-a-week protocol for Publix. I used to be in there 5 days a week. Now it's 1 day a week. And tomorrow, Lee, I believe it's going to be the day because they got the old-timer hours from 7 to 8. Now, I ain't going there at a quarter to 7 and waiting online. Forget about that. I'll stroll in 7:25 to Kemper, and I'll head straight to the paper aisle and see what kind of shreds I can pick up there after it's been picked clean. But I'm going to be wearing a mask, Lee. I got a coffee filter as part of my mask. And I'm thinking about bringing Cosmo with me to ward off everybody else. So, Lee, tomorrow's a big day in the Kaufman household.
So Cosmo's going to keep people at social distance. Social distancing, for people who don't know, it's generally half of an average Peyton Barber run.
Now, wait a minute. We got the draft next week. And, Steve, if the Bucks don't come away with a running back by the end of draft weekend, there's going to be an insurrection in Tampa Bay.
Ira, I got to say, that the once a week to Publix, that's got to be good for your diet, because I know usually you're there maybe five times a week, and we all know you grab a little bag of chips, a little thing, you know, a little snack. Am I right?
Well, I don't understand what's going on, Lee, with my metabolism, because I'm eating three full meals a day. There ain't nothing else to do around here. And I think I might be down 3 pounds. You know, it can't all be from walking Cosmo every night around the neighborhood. So I don't know. Maybe the social distancing is kind of helping my waistline right now, Lee.
Most people are gaining weight like crazy because all they do is sit at home and eat. And you're losing weight.
I think I'm losing weight.
By the way, your coffee filter mask, will you strap it on with a piece of duct tape? Is that what you do with the coffee filter?
Nice and snug, baby. I can't have that coffee filter falling out. I can't have it.
And then when the cashier asks you a question, it's like the teacher in Peanuts.
And, you know, my debit card hasn't been working the last few times in public. I've been having some trouble. It keeps saying, try it again, try it again. You know, maybe they're trying to tell me something.
I'm irritated at Publix. Publix had this big thing. Hey, we're touchless now. You could use your Apple app. Just bring up your credit card. You don't have to touch anything. Nonsense. You still got to use a PIN number. That's a big fraud Publix put on the public.
Now, we had a big leg of lamb for Easter Sunday. A giant one, gentlemen. And we're having the leftovers tonight. I even gave some over to a neighbor, you know, as a nice gesture of the kind of calamity we're in right now. It was a very neighborly gesture. Mashed potatoes, asparagus, mint jelly, gravy. And I brought over a care package, gentlemen, and I'm still waiting for a thank you. But that's the way it goes, Steve. The way it goes.
Well, that's very nice of you, Ira. And we have to tell everyone about Bill Curry Ford. No payments until the summer, deep into the summer. In these challenging times, Bill Curry Ford has announced the following incentive actions effective immediately on new vehicles, Ira. 0% APR for 84 months. That's 7 years for you Brooklyn-educated kids. 3 months of payments made by Ford. 3 months made as deferred payments. So you don't have to pay for 6 months. All the inventory is at BillCurryFord.com. But more important, our buddy Sean Sullivan, who we're going to hear from soon on the podcast, talking more NFL draft. He's the GM there. He will help you personally by email, phone, however he can. You can go to the dealership in person where they've got social distancing mastered in the giant, beautiful showroom. They will even bring you a car to your home to test drive and clean it out and step aside. They'll take care of the paperwork before they get there, and you can test drive it your own and bring it back to the dealership. So very exciting times at Bill Curry Ford. If you need a vehicle, this is beyond the time to do it, Ira.
Speaking of Bill Curry Ford, if there's one positive, and it ain't much of a positive, but you take what you get out of all this craziness, Lee. Now, I was getting great mileage on my cherry red 2020 Ford Escape anyway, but Lee, with everything that's going on and there's nowhere to go, and I'm not driving a one-buck place or driving to Tampa anymore, I've gone like 3-4 weeks without filling the tank. I mean, it ain't much, Lee, but it's one positive.
Yeah, that's true. And someone on Twitter said, hey, you know, you guys are doing great. You had X amount of stories up this morning. That's a good way to make use of quarantine time. And I replied to him, there is no such thing as quarantine time at JoeBucksFan.com headquarters. Nor is there a snooze policy. There's actually a no snooze policy. We work day in and day out.
Yeah, Ira, so stop stuffing your face and get back to work. What the hell's going on?
What's going on in the draft, Stevie? What's going on?
Well, Ira, the lack of traffic that you mentioned also makes it very easy and quick and simple to drive over and pick up beer at Big Storm Beer Tap Rooms in Odessa and in Clearwater. Zippity-zip, no more traffic. They've got fantastic food, all the Big Storm beers, which you can find at bigstormbrewery.com. And at the Storm Tracker at our website, just click on one of the beer cans at joebucksfan.com. Florida's best craft beer. Wonderful people, and you'll be blown away if you really try Big Storm beer. And a lot of people, Ira, have been tweeting us their cans and their four packs of Big Storm, the Wave Maker, the Bromosa. They've been trying it. They've been loving it. And it's all thanks to you, and we know how much you like that Tropic Pressure. I'm going to send you some more beer.
Oh, that's long gone. I'm ready for my next package over there, Stevie. And you know what? If you put a rush on it, it'll go well with my leftover lamb.
Perfect.
It's beautiful.
Perfect. All right, Ira.
Don't forget the food.
Absolutely. Don't forget the food, and the menu's online as well. Very easy ordering at bigstormbrewery.com. So, Sage, there's a few things to get to, some fun things. There's something sticking in my craw like a lunatic here. So I think I'm going to go to that first, Ira. You know, the Bucks, they're telling us sort of that they're in this all-in mode. Fans believe it. Everybody sort of believes it, especially the more you think about Tom Brady turning 43 years old and what this whole deal was all about and the landscape that we're living in right now. So, Ira, I look at Logan Ryan, Patriots Titans cornerback, just turned 29 years old. He's on the free agent market because he's demanding, they say, $10 million a year, which is what he was getting paid from the Titans. The guy's coming off a phenomenal season. He's only missed 3 games in the last 7 years. He's got a couple of Super Bowl rings. He's one of the best slot corners in the game. 18 passes defensed, 4 picks last year, forced fumbles, 4 of them. And you know what? I look at this guy, and maybe he'll take a little less since he hasn't been getting it on the market. Maybe he wants to play with Brady. Maybe he's an all-in move that they could still do and let the 3 young cornerback guys that they think are studs fight it out to win the top 2 outside jobs. And maybe they restructure some contracts. Maybe Brady would even restructure, kick some money down the road. He doesn't need it now. Maybe they get rid of Cam Brate and pull back a draft pick or something. But I just see this as such an opportunity. Am I crazy, Ira?
Not a bad scenario, Steve. Lee, our boy's making a lot of sense. He's a very good football player. It is a position of need. I don't trust all these Buck young defensive backs. Mike Edwards did not pan out in year one. I'm not giving up on him, Lee, but he didn't show us a lot in 2019. Whitehead has got a ways to go, shows a little bit of potential. This guy's a proven commodity, Lee. Now, it could be a financial issue. Maybe the Bucks are waiting for the market to prove to Logan Ryan that his demands are too high, and maybe they can get him for $7.5 million, Lee. But for whatever scenario you want to put on it, the guy's a very good football player, Lee. He's got familiarity with Brady. He'd fit in very well, provide a veteran presence in a very, very young Buck secondary. If they could sign him, Lee, in the next week before the draft, it would take away another position where the Bucks would think, hey, we better get another safety in here and free them up, maybe to take a wide receiver in round 3. Lee, Steve's plan makes a little bit of sense to me.
Oh, yeah, but I always refer to Pat Kerwin. He said, Pat Kerwin, the guy who turned in the card to draft Bo Jackson, the man who was one of the big shots or shot callers with the Jets years ago. He said after the draft, that's when free agent prices drop. Because people that need certain positions, those positions will be filled in the draft. And all of a sudden, what may have been four or five or six openings is three openings. So he said it's a buyer's market after the draft. I mean, yeah, the Bucks need a safety. There's no doubt about it. But I think the Bucks are being prudent here. They're waiting until after the draft when it'll be a buyer's market and they might get a guy for a lot less.
Steve, one offshoot of what Lee was just talking about, he mentioned Pat Kerwin moving the chains with Jim Miller on Sirius. Heck of a show. Steve, I'm doing some research on that 95 draft, you know, transformative draft for Bucks, one of the best in NFL history. Lee, you may not know this, but Kerwin was with the Jets at that time. He was a muckety-muck. And when the Jets pick came, which was like number 9 in 95, the fans were screaming, "We want Sapp! We want Sapp!" And they took a tight end named Kyle Brady, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Brady, who wasn't terrible, but, you know, certainly not going to have a bust in Canton. And Kerwin readily admits, guys, he was absolutely petrified by the rumors about Sapp's drug use, and that's why the Jets, and they weren't the only team that passed on him. Remember, Minnesota had a shot right before the Bucks, and they took a guy named Derek Alexander. Again, not a terrible player, but the Bucks get Sapp. Kerwin is still haunted to this day by not drafting Warren Sapp on the Jets.
I remember there's a feature that NFL Network runs so twice a year, and it features the Jets fans. And Steve could speak to this because he was at the draft one time. The feature is Jets fans melting down at the draft. You know, every year they melt down. But when they passed on Sapp, the Jets fans nearly tore the place apart. And that's a popular feature on
You know, Steve could have been one of the guys that was up in the rafters, Lee. We don't know that.
All right, Sage.
Did you ever go to the draft, Ira? When it was at a hotel in Manhattan?
I believe it was at the Sheraton. Yes, yes, that's right.
You've been there for the draft?
Yeah. Yes, I have been there. Yes, I have.
Wow.
I thought it was at. Well, when was it at the Sheraton, Ira? Wasn't it at Radio City for many years?
For many years, but before that, I think it was at the New York Sheraton.
All right, Sage. Well, we all don't have 5 decades of NFL coverage under our belts, so you're the sage. All right, Ira. Listen. One thing that I haven't heard mentioned anywhere, and I wanted to get your sage wisdom as we stay ahead of the curve on this podcast, with what's going on in the NFL and with the coronavirus and all that stuff, you know, the salary cap is based on revenues that the league has gotten in. That's what sets the next year's salary cap. Could we be looking in 2021 at the first time in a long time that the salary cap maybe goes down a little bit, even if it's only 2%? And could that affect how the Bucks draft and think about maybe re-signing and their ability to re-sign guys? And you got Shaq hanging out there who's going to want a contract. And they were vocal saying that Chris Godwin is a guy that they'd like to re-sign before the season. And how does this all maybe blend together?
Steve, I think the last thing that we should be concerned about, and I don't think it's going to happen, is the NFL salary cap going down. Even in the midst of this calamity, Lee, there are always TV deals to be negotiated, renegotiated. And the appetite, Lee, for football in 2021 is going to be off the charts. I mean, people can't wait now for NFL football. And even if the season's curtailed and you have a 12-game season, Lee, TV will pay whatever is demanded. The league has all the leverage. They got all these networks competing against each other. I don't see any way the salary cap's going down.
I'm anything but an accountant. Steve likes to bring this up, but he's absolutely right. The advertising market has bottomed out, especially in, you know, everywhere, TV, newspapers, internet, you name it. And I know TV has a lot of money, and I know the NFL is guaranteed eyeballs. I have to wonder if these TV networks will actually have the cash to pay the NFL $10 billion or whatever they thought it was going to be 6 months ago. I honestly don't know that. I'm not trying to start an argument. I'm not trying to be a devil's advocate.
Right.
I'm just wondering out loud because I fully understand in the business Steve and I are in. I fully understand the advertising market, and I hate this. I don't want to be doom and gloom, but where's the end here? I don't know. You know, I wrote this morning, There's a poll that Seton Hall did last week that 3 out of 4 people said they're not going back to a sporting event until there's a vaccine. Well, when is that going to happen? A year or 2 years? So it wouldn't shock me. Has the salary cap ever gone down? I think the answer is no. I don't recall it ever going down. Maybe this might be a first. I don't know.
I'll say this, Steve. As far as advertisers are concerned, yeah, I think they got to be more judicious with where they put their dollars in the near future. But having said that, Steve, when they look at the landscape, where are we going to put our dollars? There is no more sure thing than NFL ratings.
Yeah,
NFL ratings. There's no gamble. There's no risk. Even if it dips 5%, it's still going to kill the opposition, and you still want to be associated with the shield if you're an advertiser, Steve, and that's not going to change.
Yeah, I lean toward what you're saying, Ira, mostly because if the cuts are going to come in media, ABC, ESPN, that family is going to make cuts. It's not going to be from the NFL. It'll be from all sorts of other things that they spend money on, and they'll start slashing more at ESPN, but I don't think it'll cut their investment that they've already committed to in the NFL, even if they have to borrow the money.
You have seen that ESPN's asked, I think, their top 100 on-air salaried people to take a 10% cut.
I did see that.
Yeah.
Lee, I forgot to tell you, Ira volunteered for a 30% cut starting next week. So thanks to Ira. We love him. We're going to get him some beer.
So I'll get a 4-pack. We'll get him 2 4-packs.
I'm just teasing you, Ira. I'm just teasing you.
And Booger McFarland's digging his cleats in, gentlemen. He says no more than a 2% cut. No, I got golf lessons to take. I'm not taking more than a 2% cut.
So, Sage, what do you make, though, quickly? What do you make of Florida officially designating sports, professional sports, as an essential service, which means that the business can be open for business? So, essentially, the Lightning is allowed to skate and do whatever they do as long as there's and the caveat is right now there is no fans allowed, no public, can't be open to the public, whatever they're doing. But Florida is one of the handful of states that said sports is essential. So the Bucks could have practice tomorrow if the NFL actually allowed facilities to be open.
Well, first of all, I'm not surprised, Lee, and neither are you, that Ron DeSantis is kind of swept up in what our president wants to do, and that's reopen the country as soon as possible. You know, I thought DeSantis had been, he's been handling himself okay. Hasn't made any great faux pas, seemed very concerned, with the welfare of everybody in the state. And then all of a sudden he pulls a stunt in not only sports, but he mentions wrestling in particular. Lee, now, Lee, you might be a WWE guy. You might be. I know Alex Marvez is into that kind of stuff and you like Marvez, but wrestling, an essential, as far as going forward with this state. Lee, just because you tell athletes that they can gather, that doesn't mean they're going to do it. There are still, legitimate health concerns. There's no vaccine. Even if you take fans out of the equation, Lee, it's the athletes themselves and the leagues that put up the rules about these athletes that also have to go along with any opening. So I think we're a long way. I still think we're a long way from seeing people at One Buck Place in Amalie Arena.
Hey, well, did the NFL say that until the entire country's opened up, they're going to keep closed or something of that nature? Now, as far as wrestling, when I was in college, I used to get in the WWF. At the time, it was WWF. You know, Rowdy Roddy Piper, who had the ultimate line for all of us media people can embrace. Just when you think you have the answers, I change the questions.
Lee, only you would remember that. Only you.
That's one of the best lines I've ever heard. Just that that's classic, that the WWE was an essential business. Vince McMahon, the show must go on unless you own a football team.
Steve, I'm so old that when I watched wrestling, Bruno Sammartino, who was the big guy with Gorilla Monsoon and Baron McCluna and Cicluna and guys like that, Mr. Tojo and
J.R. I remember him.
All right, Sage.
Mr. Fuji, wasn't it? Mr. Fuji. Tojo.
Steve, every ethnic stereotype that you could tap on, they did it in professional wrestling.
Yeah, that was part of the whole shtick at the time. It would never fly today, but that's the way it was. So, all right, Sage, and we'll turn everybody back to football. I just think, to throw one nugget out there, and I know fans want to hear more football talk because the coronavirus stuff is everywhere. I think ultimately it takes maybe, what, 250 people to put on an NFL game between the roster and the officials and the TV personnel. And you don't need fans in the stadium. You don't need media. And you could just have the games. And I think the games will go on. It's hard to imagine that, you know, they're going to outlaw companies of 250 people not gathering ever again in a large space. It just seems a little strange that would go on.
I think I should, Steve, under those circumstances, I believe I should be the designated media representative. I'd have the whole press box to myself. They'd still have to put out the full spread for all the other personnel. And I'll try to smuggle you and DeKemper a turkey sandwich. I think I should be the lone media representative. Somebody's got to ask Arians and Brady the tough questions, gentlemen.
There you go, Sage. And they're going to want you 6 feet away anyway, so it's perfect. All right. So, Ira, turn the tables here. Jason Light went on Adam Schein on Sirius XM Mad Dog Radio, and he had a few interesting things to say. We wrote about it. I didn't see anyone else write about it, which is not surprising.
Of course not.
So, one thing he said is that there are multiple issues in the rushing attack, and that he expects a big jump. That's the quote, a big jump from Ronald Jones this year. Well, if Ronald Jones makes a big jump, then he's sort of like a number one feature back, right? So I don't know. I wasn't sure how to take that. And then meanwhile, Bruce Arians is with Jay Glazer talking about drafting a running back. I don't know. What did you make of that? And the other part that I was going to ask you about Light with Schein is he talked about how when they talked to Tom Brady, Brady had done film study on the Bucs. He knew the roster. He knew games. He was talking about missed plays in certain games that could have been difference makers. What do you make of Brady's intense homework on the Bucs as well?
Well, I think that's very indicatively of what a detail freak Brady is. And I think that's a great thing going forward for the Bucs. Detail-oriented, down to tendencies. The guy comes in knowing what Jamel's Dean can do well, what Anthony O'Clair has to work on. I mean, that's fantastic if you're a Bucs fan. He's already ahead of the curve. As far as the Ronald Jones stuff, Lee, we're very honest on this podcast. That's why we're back in the top 50 and we ain't leaving. Lee, that doesn't pass the smell test for Buck Vince. It just doesn't. Did Ronald Jones improve in year two? Yes. He showed some hands finally. Some. You couldn't go down any further from his rookie season. Lee, the guy averaged less than 2 yards a carry. That's unheard of. Absolutely unheard of.
What was your name, Peyton Barber?
Look, he was at 4 yards, 4.1, 4.2. That's not bad. That's not bad. But I don't think any Buck fan thinks he's going to tote the ball 200 times. He'll play a role on that. He's not going anywhere. He's not getting cut. He's not getting traded. He's not going anywhere, but they're going to add to the stable. They're short there. The fact is they haven't had a credible ground game in a long time, Lee. Too long. Way too long. And that's going to change. They're going to add a pass-catching running back. I mean, how many times does Arians have to say it, Lee? So if they walk away in the next month and they don't have one, that's a big problem in Tampa.
And I'm just being honest here, Ira, because you are the sage. You've got so much under your belt, years and years and years, coverage in the NFL.
Plenty of lamb, too.
What's that?
Plenty of lamb as well under
his
belt.
Yeah, leg of lamb. Ira, when is the last time you saw a running back who was first off, invisible his rookie year. Second year, subpar, maybe average at best, but in my eyes, subpar. And his third season, he breaks out. I don't recall that off the top of my head. Now, I threw that out on Twitter, and some guy said, well, Larry Johnson. Well, Larry Johnson, if I recall correctly, with the Chiefs, was playing in the same backfield with Priest Holmes.
I believe that's right. I believe that's right.
I mean, when's the last time you recall a running back? No, generally running backs in their third season are peaking.
That's a good point. And Steve, I'll throw this out too. I think this is kind of unusual. Not only are the Bucs in desperate need of a running back per se, but Steve, a very specific type of running back. Maybe I'm exaggerating this. You tell me. But I think when they're looking at the rookie class, whether it's Cam Akers, the kid from LSU, Swift from Georgia, Taylor from Wisconsin, they might be evaluating first what kind of receiver the guy is. Now, that is not normally the first thing you look at a running back. But times have changed. Brady's here. We know what Brady did in New England. in terms of throwing to backs, whether it was Kevin Falk or whoever. And Steve, I think that's where we find ourselves right here in Tampa, is the number one prerequisite for any rookie back that's coming to Tampa is he better be able to catch the ball. That's kind of unusual, Steve.
Yeah, it's a different scenario, and it sort of plays to something Carson Palmer was talking about on radio yesterday. He was on with the Rich Eisen show, and I thought this was interesting, Stage. Wanted to hear what you and Lee thought, because so many Bucks fans last year were constantly pointing to Carson Palmer as, well, let's see what he did with Arians in his first year, and he knows Arians,
right.
That's going to mean what Jameis is going to do, and everybody poured all this respect into Palmer, you know, a guy who deserves plenty of respect. And Palmer told Rich Eisen that he thought Brady would be coming here and telling Bruce Arians, look, I need 30 or 40 of my pass plays in the offense. We'll start there, and then I'll learn all your stuff, and we'll, you know, incorporate your terminology to my plays. And Palmer went on to say that no matter what anybody says, it was Brady's offense, even when it was Josh McDaniels took over for Bill O'Brien and vice versa, O'Brien for Charlie Weiss. It was Brady's offense, so doing what Tom wanted to do, and he was running the same plays over and over again. I thought it was extra interesting because Palmer knows Arians' playbook, and he's watched the Patriots, so he sort of knows that, hey, those plays might not already be in Tampa. And meanwhile, Bruce Arians has said multiple times, oh gosh, everybody has the same plays, and we'll have them all here for Tom, no problem. Where's the answer in there?
Not everybody has the same plays, Lee. I'm not putting any faith in that. Lee, there are certain parameters about Brady's influence, but his influence is going to be immense. Now, by parameters, I meant, Lee, and I still haven't ever seen any definitive proof on this, Lee, that he desperately wanted Antonio Brown. I still haven't seen proof that Brady wanted that to happen. But, Lee, let's assume that he did. Well, that's a bridge too far for Bruce Arians, and good for Arians for saying it. Good for Arians for squashing that right at the beginning, and you don't let it linger. But, Lee, as far as designing a game plan on offense, I know you've got Arians with his experience, Christensen, Leftwich, Tom Moore, but you know who you got? You got Tom Brady. And when you make the conscious decision that that's the guy you wanted behind door number two, and now you landed him, well, what are you going to do? You're going to tell Brady that we're not going to cater to you? That's crazy. You're going to do the plays that Brady's comfortable with, and Arians better be flexible enough. Otherwise, it's not going to work, Lee.
Ira, what do you think of this? Dan Shaughnessy at the Boston Globe, who I've known for decades.
Very well respected. Yep.
He's always been a class act with me. I haven't talked to him in a couple of years. Last time I talked to him, we had a couple drinks together.
Lee, I call him the sage of Boston media. I call him the sage. How do you like that?
He's basically your equivalent, so to speak. Yeah, although he's a Red Sox guy, not so much a Patriots guy. But he claims Brady had only one option, and that was the Bucks. What's your take on that?
I think he's onto something. I think there was a very, very reduced market for Brady. Look, mostly because of his age and his salary demand. Now, could he have gotten even more money? Maybe. But, I mean, he's not making pocket change. I think the Chargers had a real interest. And I think, Steve, I think that kind of is where it ended. I don't think the Bucks were competing against five different suitors. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, Peter Schrager was on Bill Simmons' podcast the other day and was just very clear that he was told at the Combine there were two suitors for Brady, the Bucks and the Chargers, and that's how it played out. So, I mean, it sort of makes you wonder, you know, only two teams wanted Tom Brady, because you figure all the other teams knew that they would make all this fortune of money that the Glazers are going to pocket with the jerseys and everything else, and then they still weren't ready to go to Brady, even the Dolphins or the Bills. Strange.
Or Chicago, Steve, or Chicago. You know, you're right. But there are factors. I mean, you can't expect overwhelming interest, Lee, in a 42-year-old quarterback. That's not practical.
One thing that Palmer noted was that he thought Brady would have to, quote, really hitch into his throws to get the ball downfield, meaning that he doesn't have the arm strength, which I thought was interesting coming from Palmer. And he emphasized that Arians wants an empty backfield, which Brady mastered about 15 years ago. and that's going to be the goal. And that speaks to the running back that we're talking about getting, the pass-catching running back. I sort of have my eye on maybe if they don't get the guy they want in the draft, because there's never any guarantee that you're going to get the guy you want, maybe Devontae Freeman is still hanging out there because he can catch the football.
Not a bad fallback. I think they'd rather have somebody with less tread on the tires. Lee, I've said it 12 times, Lee. I'll say it again. The Bucs are going to draft a running back, and they're going to draft one within the first 2 days of the draft. I'd be shocked if they didn't, Lee.
Wow. Well, speaking of the draft, I got this from Peter King, your colleague on the Hall of Fame committee. Peter King was on Cowherd's show yesterday, Monday, I should say. And, you know, they were talking about Jordan Love, who's like, he's described as exciting. He's got a big gun for an arm. He's kind of raw. And some NFL people absolutely love him. Some people are muted, so to shall we say, on the enthusiasm. But he's generally thought of as a first-round quarterback. Generally, from what the NFL Network is saying, it looks like he's going to be a late first-round pick. But Peter King on Cowherd Monday, he said, Jordan Love, he's not Pat Mahomes, but he's Pat Mahomes-like in a sense that he's kind of underneath the radar, so to speak. Everybody's talking about, what's-his-face from LSU.
Right.
But anyway, Peter King said the best place for Jordan Love, if he gets drafted by a team with a quarterback in his 30s, who you know in 2 years you'll need a quarterback, and you have this guy sit and learn for 2 years, and in 2 years you take over. And I'm thinking, well, why not a team that has a quarterback in his 40s, and you'll be looking for a quarterback in 2 years? Now, if the guy's a late first-round pick, could you see the Bucs, if the price is too steep to trade up for one of these offensive tackles, if the price is too steep, could you see light trading back into the first round, maybe getting Love, and in addition, could you also pick up an additional second-round pick, and you can get your running back, and since wide receiver is so deep this year that a second-round pick would be a first-round pick any other year, you can get your number three speedster receiver slash returner and a running back and your quarterback.
Boy, Lee, you got it all covered over there, DeKemper. I'll say this. Steve, if they stay at 14, they're not drafting Jordan Love at 14. That's not going to happen. Your 14th pick has to be an immediate contributor. Now, for Lee's scenario, suppose he's still there at number 27, but you don't think he'll be there in the middle of the second round. And, Steve, here's the critical part. Arians has to love the guy. Arians, not Clyde Christensen, not Byron Leftwich, not Tom Brady, and not Ed Glazer. You understand what I'm saying? Arians has to watch, and I bet you he is watching a lot of film of this quarterback class. I don't think Arians needs to look at the safety class. You know, I think he can trust the scouts in that regard. But as far as quarterback, Arians has to sign off on the guy and lead the charge. If he loves Love, you know, it's not far-fetched that they could trade back into the first round. Steve, what I think is more likely is, maybe if they're going to trade back in late into the first round, I think maybe it would be for the running back that they think separates himself from a group of about five guys that they think clearly is the best back and the best fit for this football team with Brady under center. And if that's the case, the guy's probably not going to be there mid-second round. And so maybe you give up a third-round pick and move up and get your guy. They're not going to draft Love at 14. They're not.
I'm putting you on the spot, Ira, because you've transitioned out of the Tampa Tribune. It's been almost 4 years. You're a Bucs fan. You love hugging Bucs fans. You're a Chiefs fan as well. You work for Joe Bucs fan. Who do you want the Bucs to take? I don't care if it's a guy specifically, but what position do you want this team to take in round one?
I'm on record. You got to take one of the four offensive tackles. And if they're not there, let the draft come to you. Don't go crazy. Don't move up from 14 to 9. It's going to cost you a second-round pick, and this team cannot afford to give up a second-round pick. Go take the second-best defensive lineman, because Derek Brown will be gone, and you take Chase on or Kinlaw, and you look for a tackle later in the draft. But look, this right tackle thing, it would be very nice to upgrade, but it wouldn't be a total disaster if it doesn't happen in the first round. It's not a disaster. You're not looking for a quarterback.
Lee, what do you want them to do in round one?
I want them to stay at 14. That's what I want them to do.
They can go all sorts of ways. I'm not opposed whatsoever to trading back and getting Love. And like I said earlier, then you have an extra second round pick. In theory, you can get your wide receiver, this guy from TCU who's really, really quick. You can get your running back, and there's a bunch of running backs to get. I'm all for that. I'm all for getting a defensive lineman. Kinlaw I like a lot, and I'm going to ask Ira this. And so with me, I haven't come down. Almost every year, I had one guy where I pounded the drum for the Bucks to get. Just beat the hell out of that drum. Beat it worse than Alex Van Halen. But this year, I don't, because I think the Bucks can go all sorts of different ways. And either way they can go, whether they trade up, whether they trade back, whether they stay put. There's all kinds of guys to get that I think would help this team. So I actually cannot commit. I guess you would put a gun to my head, I would say Kinlaw, because we know Sue's not going to be around next year. They won't That's be able right. to afford him. So That's I would right. say Kinlaw. But I'm not, you know, I just think they can go so many ways. But I'm very, very intrigued. And you could blame Peter King for planting the seed. I'm very intrigued about the Bucks potentially trading back, or like Ira said, maybe trading up in the second round, from the second round, to get Jordan Love. I'm let's put it this way. I'm more kosher, if I can use that word. I'm more open-minded to the Bucks trading up to getting a quarterback than I am a kicker.
And Steve, remember this. Steve, remember this. If all four of those elite tackles prospects are gone, that almost definitely means, Steve, that the Bucks would have their choice of the second best defensive lineman in the country. And that's not a bad thing, Steve. Sue, best days are behind him. And JPP's got a lot of wear on the tires. Steve, that's not a bad pick at 14.
Yeah, when Lee references Kinlaw, he's talking about Javon Kinlaw, South Carolina, 6'5", 315, versatile defensive tackle, a monster. And I have to say, since I pinned you guys down, my top choice would be going the defensive lineman, either Kinlaw or Chaisson. You can't go wrong with the edge rusher if you think he's a good guy. I also, and as crazy as it sounds, I'd like to see them get go all in on an impact running back. I mean, those are the guys, you pick the right guy, they have the instant impact. It's a long list, and this offense could be extraordinary if they had a real running back. And everybody says that Brady's going to make the running game better automatically already. So what happens if you put an elite running back there? I mean, it could be they could be scoring 30 points a game. So I don't know. I'm going on the defensive line.
Steve, you're not wrong about the running back, but then the word value comes in, and I haven't seen any mock drafts. Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen any. Basically, any mock draft that has a running back going in the top 15. Lee, am I wrong? Top 15?
No, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, there's like 850 a day. But no, I don't think I haven't seen one. I'm sure there might be one out there. But I haven't seen a credible. Well, none of them are credible in my eyes. But I haven't seen any, no.
No, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, Ira. I know what you're saying.
Steve, you know what might help in this regard is, remember what I just said 5 minutes ago. They're looking for a particular type of back. In terms of a pass catching, a natural guy with hands. And Steve, those guys could very likely still be around in the middle of the second round. Or if, Jason Light's intel says that's not going to happen, possibly a move up to, number 25 from the middle of the second round. But Steve, I think they can get the kind of back that they're looking for with particular traits, not having to pick them at 14, Steve.
I agree with you, Ira. That's where you get those guys. Second, third round. The Jason Light, though, doesn't know how to do that, so it makes us all a little nervous. Now, I wanted to run by one thing, Ira. I've been paying attention to various Colts media, as well as some other teams, of course. But Joe Haig, the right tackle that they signed, Bucks,
right,
27
right.
years old, 1 year, $2.3 million. I've read and heard multiple things that said Haig had multiple suitors, and he's the kind of guy and the level of player who would not have signed with anyone that quickly if he wasn't told he had a legitimate chance to start. And so that, I don't know if that clouds anything for you, but I think it's legitimate. And what's your reaction to that?
I think, Steve, I think it adds another layer to my assertion that if they don't walk away with a right tackle in round one, or even round two, I don't think it's a calamity. I think Haig will be adequate. He's not elite, and he's not 22 like, you know, Andrew Thomas would be, or Becton, or Wirfs, or Wills. But it's not a disaster if they don't walk away with this right tackle, Lee, with a premium pick. It's natural that they're looking that way. But I think the Haig pickup was kind of sneaky, Lee, and I think it's going to prove valuable.
Ira, what do you think of what Albert Breer? And Albert Breer is very plugged in. In my eyes, he surpassed Peter King as the best NFL columnist.
Whoa. Nice.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I really think so. I mean, I like Peter King. I get along with him real well, but he's starting to mail it in. I mean, he can't file a column without a baseball story in there. Not that I'm anti-baseball, but it's like, and then he whines. Think about this. You're making $350,000. That's what the guy from Sports Illustrated would make. Peter King was just at Sports Illustrated. Let's say he's making $350 million or $350,000 for a columnist, which is absurd to me, but I'm a capitalist. If you can get it, great. And you whine about writing football in May and June, you're making six figures. Give me a break, dude.
Absolutely.
So anyway, Breer is very well plugged in. He doesn't ignore college football like Peter King does because it's vital to the NFL. And Breer claims that, you know, Breer, he's calling all around. He's calling all kinds of GMs, all kinds of assistant GMs, all kinds of suits throughout the NFL. And he said he's hearing a lot of chatter from other NFL suits that the Bucs are trying to trade up for a right tackle.
Lee, I'm going to put that in the category of planted stories. I am. Now, Breer, that doesn't diminish Breer in my eyes, mm-hmm. Lee. And he's particularly strong from a New England perspective, right, Lee?
He used
to cover the Patriots, and he's been strong on the Brady stuff. I think the cost is too high. Now, Buck fans are looking at the draft saying, you know what? You can move up from 14 to 9. It's no big deal. Yes, it is. Moving up five spots in the first round is going to cost you your second round pick. I don't think the Bucs are in a position to make that move. They can't be that desperate for a right tackle. Not that. Now, look, if you're looking for a left tackle with Tom Brady under center, I could understand it, but not a right tackle. I mean, you want to upgrade. Dotson's gone. I understand. By the way, Dotson's still out there. He's waiting for a phone call from Jason Light. Hasn't gotten one. I talked to him the other day, and he's still out there. Before they got Haig, I was thinking about bringing Dotson back as a backup at a reduced salary. Now that's not going to happen. But, Steve, I don't see the move from 14 to 9 for a right tackle. Not for a right tackle.
I haven't written this yet. I have it on tape, and I could write this in June. It would still be timely. About a week or two ago, Kirvin was talking about the Bucs in general, and he went off on Haig. He scoffed at Haig. This guy's not a starting right tackle. He basically said, go bring Dotson back. He goes, if Haig is your answer at right tackle, time to call Dotson.
How many teams out there have five quality offensive linemen? I mean, let's not go overboard here.
Well, that's also that ties to the Bucs actually desiring a right tackle, because do you think the other four are quality? And if they are, then do you really need the right tackle versus a more valuable position on the defensive line?
Steve, I'm going to throw one more thing. I haven't heard anybody mention this. This could be the sage in his old age and his dotage. I think I might have been I might be eating too much lamb, gentlemen. Guys, would it be crazy to get a guard and move Kappa to right tackle? Is that crazy?
That's old news, Ira. Old news. It's not happening.
Old news. All right. All
it's
right.
Not happening. We have to remind everybody, Bill Curry Ford, BillCurryFord.com. They present all of your work at JoeBucksFan.com. Amazing deals going on right now. 0% financing. Interest rates have dropped. Tremendous value on used vehicles, and they have the biggest selection in town. Just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, they're open. Social distancing in effect. Giant dealership, so that's not even an issue by any stretch of the imagination. Bill Curry Ford. And gobble up that Big Storm beer, load up for the draft. Everyone's going to be at home. It's a great time to just sit back for 5 hours and read Joe Bucks Fan and watch the draft and drink your favorite Big Storm beer. So, Sage, let me throw this at you before we get the hell out of here, your column that you wrote the other day about what's going to happen, what's not going to happen in round one. I will throw that back to you in case there's anything you want to tell anyone that they should notice in there. Maybe you changed your mind on something. But your trade-up, which you've mentioned before, for Isaiah Simmons, do you think that's the guy that they're really looking to trade up for if they want to trade up at all?
Steve, I didn't say they would trade up for Simmons. I said that if they stay at 14 and Simmons with a 5% chance.
I know.
Admittedly, 5%, Lee, that he's sitting there at 14. 5%, maybe less. But I said that's the fly in the ointment with, you know, in terms of position need and this and that. You know, the guy could be a linebacker, the guy could be a safety, but Lee, if somehow he slips to 14, which probably isn't going to happen, the Bucks have to take him, Lee, under the umbrella, best player available. And I didn't say trade up for Simmons. I'm not saying that. I think that would be nuts. Because you're still not sure that the guy could is going to excel at the safety position, and there's no room at the end at linebacker right now. So, but Lee, if he's there at 14, you know, position be damned. I'm taking Simmons.
If he's there at 9, I'd be so tempted to trade up. Because all I read about this guy, just people just fall over themselves, this guy is the next biggest thing. You know, when a guy like Bill Polian, who is not known to wax poetic about anybody in the draft, calls this guy the next Derrick Brooks, that's the guy I want.
That's pretty high cotton, Mr. DeKemper. It's pretty high cotton.
All right, Sage. Well, I just wanted to throw it out there. I know you didn't say trade up for Simmons, but, you know, Lee brought up trading up. So I thought, hey, is this a guy you would trade up for? You know, sometimes teams will call around, say, hey, we're looking to trade up for an offensive lineman. And they're really smoke screening because they're looking to trade up for somebody else. So you never really know.
Hey, Steve. Steve, I want to make one more point about that column the other day.
Good.
And this is another way to look at it. Lee, the basis of the column was these are the positions the Bucks are not going to take if they stick at 14, and it was a lot of positions. You know, maybe 5-6 positions. And Lee, I think you could look at that, and the overarching takeaway from it, Lee, is this team's come a long way, and here's what they don't need. And 5-6 positions, you know, all of a sudden you're very targeted. These are the things we do need. And in that very narrow way, it's kind of a sign of progress around here.
It is, but you know what? I'm not going to say it, but I think all three of us can do the math where this came from. When Schefter came out early in free agency that the Bucks, that Jason Light has phone ringing off the wall with free agents wanting to come here, you're telling me Joe Haig is the only guy that could get? Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think we can all do the math on who planted that story. Light goes on Shine's show, and Shine was asking him, so, oh, all these free agents, the Bucks are so attractive. Where are they?
Ira, do you think Jason Light takes a flyer on Ricky Aguayo as an undrafted free agent?
You know, guys, I've been thinking about Kinlaw. Steve, you mentioned Kinlaw. You know, in a year or two, if you bring Kinlaw in and you work him in, you know, 30-40% of the snaps in year one, Lee, that leaves you with Kinlaw and Vita Vea in the middle of your defensive line.
Yeah.
Young guys, productive. That ain't bad, Lee.
Not only is it not bad, we always hear about rotation, defensive line rotation. And Bo Allen obviously went to the Belichick, so there was a guy that was out of your rotation. You're talking about 30 snaps a game. For this guy to be in a rotation, he'd get a lot of snaps to spell Sue, to spell Via. The more I think about Kinlaw, the more I like. And that would be great. And again, I don't believe Sue is here next year. Next year, somebody's going to go bye-bye next year because of the salary cap. But I think it's going to be Sue rather than Godwin.
And Steve, at that point, they will have extended Godwin. So that's a sizable expenditure right there.
Well, if Kinlaw comes in here, he better be equally rotating with Vea and Sue. There's no reason not to do that. Sue only plays 2/3 of the snaps anyway, so there's no reason why they can't all play 2/3 and really get after it. So, Sage, let the fans hear your wisdom as we depart episode 1 of this week.
I want everybody to clear out of my local Publix tomorrow morning, and I want a clean aisle 8. Because I am making a dash You think Isaiah Simmons ran a good 40? You haven't seen me with a shopping cart, gentlemen.